Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. Are pollinator gardens an eco-friendly way to attract native bees, butterflies, and insects? Or are they an eyesore, irksome to neighbors that violate local ordinances? The issue spilled over at a recent Blendon Township meeting that brought out more than 100 residents who railed against proposed new rules for what's also called natural landscaping. Joining us now is Craig Toothman, a retired dentist and the founder and president of Franklin County's Pollinator Pathway, a group formed not quite a year ago to provide information about the pollinator process. Welcome to All Sides, Dr. Toothman.
Thanks for having me.
So define a pollinator garden for me. Is there a universal definition, or is that a part of the problem that everyone calls a pollinator garden something different?
I don't know of a universal definition. You hear the term naturalized landscaping, things that are less traditional, maybe use native plants more than non-native ornamentals, have aspects that mimic nature, provide habitat for pollinators and other insects and wildlife.
So more people in Ohio and elsewhere are creating pollinator gardens. They're really growing in popularity. Why is this happening? Why do so many people want to have pollinator gardens?
I don't know. I wonder if, you know, this is an outgrowth of a variety of things. Maybe a general unease on the part of society with issues such as climate change, where people feel somewhat helpless. I think that maybe a turning point was reached in around 2007. Dr. Doug Tallamy, University of Delaware entomologist, wrote a book called Bringing Nature Home, which I think resonated with a lot of people. It was a concept of creating corridors of native plant habitat for pollinators, and essentially based on the concept of the distances that native bees can forage for pollen. Was a concept that I think was widely embraced. It was simple to understand. It was inexpensive. Could be done very successfully on a small scale, make an actual conservation difference, and it was very hopeful.
What led you to start this group, so the Franklin County Pollinator Pathway?
I continue to be excited by nature, the natural world. I find I'm just simply amazed by the sheer existence of many natural things, big trees, tiny insects, birds, caribou. I feel very grateful for what I've been able to see and touch and learn about nature. I would like to see everyone, particularly children, have the opportunity to experience that wonder, that excitement and surprise that natural things can provide.
You're one of two ambassadors for the, is it Xerces? Am I saying it right? The Xerces Society in Ohio. Can you tell us the origin of that group? And I guess start with what's a Xerces. I need to start there.
Xerces is a nonprofit organization, international, promotes the conservation of all invertebrates, so any animal without a backbone. There's a particular focus on pollinating insects because they are so deeply associated with our ecosystem services and the production of our human food resources. Xerces, the society, was formed by an entomologist in 1971, and it was named after the Xerces blue butterfly, which is the first butterfly known to go to extinct in North America directly due to human influence. Lived in the sand dunes outside of San Francisco, and as the city spread and evolved. It was a classic conservation problem. The habitat was fractured, degraded, lost. Butterfly was last seen flying in 1943.
Oh. So basically, this group and the idea of pollinator gardens, the idea is to hope like something like that doesn't happen again. You know, the loss of this butterfly, you can't bring it back. And so there's lots of beautiful insects who do a lot of good work, and we won't be able to bring them back if we lose them.
Well, I think the thought is, you know, trying to always look forward. No, there's no way to bring, you know, the Xerces blue back. But can we provide the resources to maybe prevent that from happening to some other creature? And fortunately for insects, insects are tremendously resilient. There's an old baseball movie with the phrase, you know, if you build it, they will come. But it's really true for insects. The idea of creating habitat does not require large areas, does not require sophisticated knowledge. A collection of potted plants on an apartment balcony can contribute needed habitat. So again, it empowers a wide variety of people to actually make a conservation difference.
Licking County started its pollinator pathway program a little bit earlier than Franklin County, and they also helped yours get started and helped Delaware County get off the ground as well. The goal is to start a continuous pathway to attract native insects. So here's Susan King from the Licking County program talking about what she's seen in her county.
We have seen tremendous interest from folks who want to convert, even if it's just a couple hundred square feet of their yard, into even multiple acres. So it's a rural county. We have folks that have larger properties, and including lots of 5-acre lots where folks don't want to spend their entire Saturday mowing multiple acres of grass that they don't use for recreation or other uses.
So, Greg, she mentioned that Licking County is more rural, so they can have larger pollinator gardens, and maybe they can do more with pollinator gardens with less complaints because neighbors aren't right next to each other. Do you feel like Franklin County has a chance to do more with this, just maybe not as big as Licking County?
Franklin County is quite a bit different than Licking County or Delaware County. I believe there are 17 cities in Franklin County. Mm-hmm. Something like 9 villages, 17 townships. I think there are even 13 other designated population areas. So you've got a tremendous complexity from a political standpoint, from an administrative standpoint. It's much more, as you would know, urban, suburban properties. So the bad news is this is more challenging to create connected corridors. The good news is they can be small spaces. They just need to be close together. Our native bees, of which there are over 450 in different species, mm-hmm. just in Ohio. Mm. Some of them forage approximately 150 feet. They might live their entire life right in your backyard.
Oh.
Even the bigger ones have to have, you know, their daily foraging distances are, I like to use, a quarter of a mile, 400 yards. So, gosh, you're not talking about much more than a football field. And so that small sites, but close together, let these native bees in particular forage back and forth and back and forth, and then they end up pollinating those plants, including the ones that are our food crops.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about pollinator gardens with Craig Toothman of the Pollinator Pathway in Franklin County. There was a recent Blendon Township meeting that more than 100 people came to, which is a surprisingly high number of people for a township meeting. And the township shared a draft of rules that they had set up to govern natural landscapes. An overwhelming number of residents opposed what the trustees were trying to put in place. They called it government overreach, infringing on their property rights. I don't know if you were at this meeting, but are you surprised that that many people came out about natural landscaping?
No, I was at that meeting. I was asked to attend it, and I testified in as a representative of Franklin County Pollinator Pathway. And I made some fairly bland comments about the need for pollinators and the importance of habitat. And then I was followed by an angry mob of people that were just, I mean, the anger was palpable. It really, as an aside, was kind of cool experience because it was like seeing democracy in action. I mean, these people were fired up. They didn't like what was being done. They spoke in a respectful, organized manner, but the trustees ended up tabling the proposal.
Yeah, we reached out to Blendon Township through their a contact form on the website for today's show, but didn't hear back. But they did table the issue. So the people who spoke after you, they wanted natural landscaping. They wanted to be able to do what they wanted to do.
Absolutely. And I think there's a cognizance that, you know, we live typically in a suburban setting, so we have neighbors. We have to be respectful. There are differences. This is a cultural issue. It isn't really a scientific issue. It's a difference of attitudes, what constitutes beauty, what maintains property values, what people like to see when they drive by or walk through the neighborhood. And so we do have to find some balance between personal expression and cooperation with our neighbors.
What do you say to people who say that natural landscaping is just the sign of a lazy homeowner who doesn't want to deal with their weeds, but then they plop a little sign in the yard that says, this is a pollinator habitat?
I would say I probably agree with that complaining neighbor. A naturalized landscape, or certainly a pollinator garden, not to get into semantics, but you know, a garden is an intentional creation. It's not wild. It's not even natural. We may mimic natural processes and ecosystem services, but it's done on purpose. And so I think that concept of intentionality is critical. There is a concept called cues of care, which are visual signs that anyone can very readily see that indicate that an area of habitat was done on purpose. This isn't neglect. There are signs like borders, other mown areas, pathways, different heights of plants, different designs. I mean, you know, when you think of landscaping, you can go from the formal gardens of Versailles all the way to a wild prairie and everything in between. But these man-made gardens are an expression of intentionality, and the cues of care tell everyone that they may not particularly be attracted to that style of gardening, but yet they can readily see that it is gardening. It's not neglect.
So intentionally picking plants that are going to attract bees and butterflies rather than just overgrown weeds that don't have any flower to them, right?
Well, weeds have, you know, weeds are tough customers, they're survivors. But in general, again, the idea is to provide habitat, you know, with a purpose, with an intention. And those visual cues of care tell anyone driving by that this is something that was done on purpose. This isn't just simple neglect.
You mentioned something that I thought was very thought-provoking. You said that one out of every three bites of human food involves pollination. So it's important to think of not just the butterflies, but also the bees, right?
It is. Those are estimates, as you might suspect. But the amount of crops worldwide that requires pollination is astounding. With the decline of these insects, I think you could use the term concerning. That's where our human food resources come from. The wind is a pollinator. You know, there are many different types of pollinators. Pollination is the process of plant reproduction. So anything that moves pollen from one flower to another is a pollinator. But the wind, for example, corn here in Ohio is wind pollinated. They make zillions of pounds of pollen, and the wind just spreads it around. But most things are pollinated by insects, and among insects, bees are far and away the most important pollinators because they need pollen to complete their life cycle.
I wanted to circle back to Blendon Township just for one second, because among the proposals, the township wanted residents, if they wanted to have natural landscaping and or a pollinator garden, the township wanted residents to take a class and then buy a permit. Is that okay? Like, is that too much, like, to have to take a class and get a permit to do this? Do you think that was overreach?
I would look at any homeowner and say, if you want to plant a hosta in your yard, do you have to take a class? Do you have to get a permit?
No.
You can grow tulips. You can grow pretty much anything you want in your landscaping, as long as it's viewed as being a garden and intentionality. So the selection of plants becomes, I think, kind of a discrimination situation.
All right. Well, coming, Craig Toothman from Pollinator Pathway is going to stay with us. And coming up, we're going to talk with the City of Columbus zoning officer, and we'll be taking your calls. We're going to learn more about what the City of Columbus is doing with all these pollinator gardens. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Are pollinator gardens an eco-friendly way to attract bees, butterflies, and insects? Or are they an eyesore that irk neighbors and violate local ordinances? The issue spilled over recently at a Blendon Township meeting that brought out more than 100 residents who railed against proposed new rules for what is also called natural landscaping. As these gardens explode in popularity, municipalities like Columbus are rethinking existing ordinances on weeds and more. Still with us is Dr. Craig Toothman, retired dentist and founder and president of Franklin County Pollinator Pathway, a group that was formed a little less than a year ago to provide information about the pollinator process. Craig, thanks again for being here.
My pleasure.
And joining us now is Anthony Celebrezzi III, who goes by Tony. He's Columbus's deputy director of the Department of Building and Zoning Services. Welcome back to All Sides, Tony.
Thank you for having me.
So, Tony, the city's code enforcement and gardeners have butted heads over this issue in the past. Last year, multiple gardeners received city code violations and were threatened with criminal charges, fines, even jail time, related to pollinator gardens and natural landscaping. Tell me about this, like jail time, really, over weeds.
so with our code violations, the attorneys require us to put all the information and ramifications if you choose not to to work towards compliance with the violations. So we want compliance. Our department, our director, the mayor is all about just getting compliance. We don't want to fine people. We don't want to hassle them any more than we do. And that's a lot of the reason why our code enforcement is more complaint driven than proactive, because different parts of our city will accept different things with how people maintain their yards.
So you don't necessarily have code people out driving around looking for things.
They've got 90,000 plus inspections they already do a year, and so they're pretty busy.
Yeah. Okay. So in June, City Council passed code changes to ease some of the tension that I was talking about. Can you tell me what they changed?
Sure. We tried to look at this from the most simplistic fashion. Most folks were getting violations under high weeds and grass or oh goodness, it's drawn a quick blank on that. But basically, you know, when you don't have, people don't see grass in people's front yards. Mm. Some people don't like it. And so we added a pollinator, a definition for what a pollinator garden is, and then provided some general parameters that exempts them from that code section. And thus, you know, so it's a matter of working with the code officer goes out, inspects, takes a look, and then makes a determination. So there's an education process both with the public and with our code officers.
Mm-hmm. Craig, was the pollinator garden community, were they a fan of the changes? Do you think that the city did enough, not enough?
I don't want to speak, too broadly on behalf of others, but it is my impression that the conservation community was quite pleased with the results of this. I would certainly like to take this opportunity to commend Tony on his the trustworthy process that this underwent. I think everything was transparent and positive, and I think most people feel like it's always a compromise, but I think everyone feels like this is a pretty good result.
Yeah, Tony, how do you draw the line between whether someone is just a lazy homeowner who doesn't want to mow versus it is a pollinator garden, it is natural landscaping, they're trying to attract bees and butterflies?
So yeah, I heard Craig earlier talk about the cues of care. Mm-hmm. What our code officers are looking for is that there is a level of care and some delineation. You know, I always ask people to give us some sort of border that we can defend the decision to say that is a pollinator garden. Also, what is in there? You know, our code officers use our phones with a number of different apps to identify different plants because they're responsible for three different volumes of our city code that they enforce. So they're not going to be expert botanists out there. They've got a few that are in the ranks, but generally speaking, they're going to go out there, they're going to engage with the property owner and talk with them about that and try to point out where they're coming from and then how they're looking at it. You know, is there a grass? Are there lots of weeds in there? Or does it appear to be flowering, flowers that are going to be beneficial to it? And there's also some criteria with regards to vision triangle and setbacks and then also neighbors' yards where the pollinator garden can't be flowing into another parcel or another property.
There are some people who are anti-grass. I mean, they say that having a lawn is actually not natural. Is that, Craig, what do you think of that?
In general terms, I would agree completely with that. Our native grasses are not what people create their lawns with. Mm-hmm. What I call a traditional lawn is a non-native cool season grass, native to Eastern Europe, Western Asia. Mm-hmm. Was brought here by the settlers.
Someone along the way decided it looked nice and everyone started doing it.
Well, it was actually brought here by early settlers as pasture grass. Mm. It's very invasive. It forms dense roots. It works great for pasture. In rangeland areas, it's considered an invasive species, but it became worldwide the grass for lawns. Commonly referred to as Kentucky bluegrass, but it's not from Kentucky.
Oh, poor Kentucky then. Okay.
The problem with it is that these non-native lawns don't support any biological activity. Mm. They're just kind of green, might as well be astroturf.
Tony, we talked about a recent Blendon Township meeting where angry residents were all balking at Blendon Township wanted to institute some rules and regulations where they wanted people to have to take a class and get a permit to have natural landscaping. And they ended up tabling the issue because 100 people came out to speak against it. But where's the middle ground here between like the city of Columbus allowing a property owner to use their land the way they want and then what the city needs to regulate?
So, you know, we tried to take attack where we were allowing people to be free to do what they want with their properties within certain criteria. And part of that falls back on the minimal criteria that we set out in our code with regards, as I mentioned earlier, to neighboring parcels, spilling over into that, not spilling over onto the sidewalks, making sure there's a pathway there. Also looking at the division triangles if you're on the corner, because that's a safety issue. We also, we have a list. We follow the state list of noxious weeds, and because they've got better resources to figure out what that is. It's a huge list. And so, we ask people to just try to follow, making sure that the pollinator garden is made up of natural and native plants to Ohio. It's part of the definition of what a pollinator garden, native plant pollinator garden is. Mm-hmm. Exactly what the code calls it.
You mentioned the safety issue a couple of times. So is this if the pollinator garden is too high and sticks out, if you're trying to pull out of a driveway or go around a corner, if you can't see, is that so a city code person would come and literally drive through and see what they can see?
They would literally measure it. Mm-hmm. We do have, depending on whether it's a intersection of two streets, intersection of a street and an alleyway, they're different size or different size triangles based on speeds and what type of street it is. And then, as you mentioned, also backing out of your driveway, you want to be able to see if there are pedestrians coming down, if there's a sidewalk, or if there's other cars coming along. That's why code does require within those areas to be 12 inches or less.
Would someone, though, have to report that? So if their neighbor's driveway, if they feel their neighbor can't see pulling out of their driveway, someone else would have to report it.
They would. Different areas of town will accept different forms of management for your property. Where I live, I know we've got some folks that have a fantastic pollinator garden right on the alleyway, but the neighbors aren't worried about it. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason. Whereas I know we're dealing with an issue where another portion of town, someone got a violation because they're in that vision triangle, and a neighbor felt that they were, because there's no sidewalks in mm-hmm. that area, they were walking along, they were almost hit by a car coming around that didn't see them because the pollinator garden was too high and it was in that vision triangle.
So did you ask that person in that case to cut it back a little bit?
Or? We are working with them. They've complied a number of things that were in violation of. That mm-hmm. part, I suspect they will probably appeal to our Property Maintenance Appeals Board, and we'll work from there.
Okay. So did this the changes in city code and the idea of, allowing pollinator gardens, natural landscaping, this add a whole new workload for you?
it added a new workload of education. Like I said, not only for homeowners and neighbors, but also for the code officers to sit down and learn, work through this to understand, what is a pollinator garden and what should it look like, or what shouldn't it look like?
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about pollinator gardens with Craig Toothman, founder and president of Franklin County's Pollinator Pathway, and Tony Celebrezzi III, Columbus's deputy director in the Department of Building and Zoning Services. Listeners, in a few minutes, we'll take your calls. With what questions do you have about pollinator gardens? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Craig, are there like pamphlets out there, or how can people learn how to build and create a proper pollinator garden that is going to pass Tony's codes? What do they need to know? Where can they learn it?
I would say in general, the internet, almost every conservation organization, the National Wildlife Federation, the Xerces Society, Pollinator Pathway, certainly Franklin County Pollinator Pathway, they have websites. Their information is readily available. Mm-hmm. Certainly within Franklin County, that is one of our aspects of our mission, which is to work with diverse communities and partner to create and restore native plant habitat for pollinators throughout the county. Mm-hmm. So we are literally here to help. Fortunately, it is not a complicated process. Awareness of the noxious weed code that Tony just successfully amended is a good place to start. And beyond that, it's down to habitat aspects and plant selection.
I don't think that there's many like places where you go buy plants, you know, even Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever you go buy plants. Do they carry native plants that you can, is that a place to start or no? You have to go elsewhere to find native plants.
Unfortunately, native plants can be a little more challenging. There used to be a phrase, the military-industrial complex. I refer to this as the nursery non-native ornamental plant complex.
Okay.
You know, if you back up and think of a nursery, they're going to sell plants that people want. Many of those people learn about these non-native ornamentals by what they have historically seen. Mm-hmm. Maybe they've been advised by a landscape architect. And so it feeds on itself. And so a large so-called big box store is going to sell the flowers and plants that it expects you to buy. Typically, those are not native plants. There are native plant retail vendors right here in Central Ohio that do an absolutely wonderful job. And so the plants are readily available, but not at your local nursery very probably.
All right.
But I will add, that's changing rapidly. These stores, you know, they're in business to sell plants.
And so go into the nursery and ask them for
and
it.
Ask them.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I wanted to get back to Licking County for one more minute. In Licking County, they're expanding the idea of pollinator gardens to grow beyond residences, and so to county property and schools. Here is Susan King again from Pollinator Pathways in Licking County talking about that.
So there's a number of schools that are doing multiple acres to create their own land labs for students to be able to learn and experience nature, get out of the classroom and into nature to learn more about ecosystems. So that's been a really exciting project that has got folks participating all over the county, Pataskala, Utica, Hebron, Granville, Heath, Newark.
So King was expanding the definition of pollinator garden and talking about this. She used a term like mini meadows, pocket prairies. Have you worked at all, Craig, with helping schools or different businesses have pollinator gardens, pocket prairies?
Yes. Again, this concept can be applied to anything from a large acreage down to potted native plants. We've supported a local watershed advocacy group in their work with trees around a Columbus City school. Mm-hmm. They had two sites that were appropriate for pollinator habitat, and our group designed and purchased the plants and planted the plants. Mm-hmm. We're working with Grange Audubon, had an area right here downtown that had been kind of fallen into disrepair, so to speak, and that was revitalized and replanted here just a matter of months ago by our organization. We've done rain gardens with churches. I mean, this can be applied almost anywhere you can think of. And again, very successfully from a conservation standpoint.
Tony, have you ever had issues where there's like a pocket prairie that a school puts up or, you know, in a metro park even, and someone calls and reports it as being weeds? Is this where signs help maybe?
In those cases, definitely. Mm-hmm. You know, it just depends on... You know, as we know, there are people out there that want to see that big carpet of green grass and nothing more. But these prairie areas, the small areas in people's yards that are doing it are very beneficial to not only their yard, but also everybody else that has the flowers on in their front yards. These same insects and bees are pollinating those to make their yards look nice. So mm-hmm. there's a huge benefit to the community from any of these areas. But we do try to use some common sense when we go out and do our inspections. And our code officers use a lot of, they're out there by themselves doing their job. and we try to instill some good common sense and just be able to defend whatever decision you make out there.
Mm-hmm. I also wanted to note, we contacted the Ohio Township Association to find out if the issue in Blendon Township is happening elsewhere. And Michael, who answered the phone, is the director of education. And he said he hadn't heard much chatter on the association level about this. He hasn't received any requests from townships for additional educational training at this point. So, Craig, would you say that this is maybe something that's coming? You know, if Blendon Township had this issue, other areas, or Tony, there's going to be changes with changes will come with ordinances, and we have to just adapt.
I would say absolutely. Mm-hmm. There are a number of large cities across America that have dealt with this successfully. Again, Columbus, I think, has done a good job. But this is a concept that's not going to go away. It's only going to get to be more. And so it lends itself to cities being proactive to address their ordinance situation.
Coming up, our guests are going to stay with us, and we're going to take a few calls. So listeners, what questions do you have about pollinator gardens? 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And All Sides continues in a moment on 89.7 NPR News. Rare to find a podcast that can actually change your life. But when the show's called Life Kit, that's kind of the whole point. I'm Mariel Segarra. 3 times a week on the Life Kit podcast, we guide you through a topic we could all use help with, from personal development to healthy living to managing your dinero, with takeaways so you can start living what you learn right away. Escucha el Life Kit podcast from NPR. You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. We're talking this hour about pollinator gardens and a recent contentious meeting in Blendon Township. How much of a role should local governments take in regulating pollinator gardens? Do you have a pollinator garden that you have planted, and what insects are you trying to attract? Or are you someone who lives near one of these and wishes there was greater enforcement? Still with us is Craig Toothman, retired dentist and founder and president of the Franklin County Pollinator Pathway. Thanks so much for joining us, Craig.
My pleasure.
And also with us is Tony Celebrezzi III. He is Columbus's deputy director in the Department of Building and Zoning Services. Thanks for being here, Tony.
Glad to be here.
And I'm going to take Sarah in Marysville. Sarah, what are you trying to do in your lawn?
Well, I have planted a pollinator forest. I've planted pollinator prairie. I've got a pollinator arboretum by the house. I've got 14 acres. And getting rid of invasives. I need something that's going to be short growing enough to sort of maybe pass as a lawn, but dense enough that it will not let the invasives come in, because weeding out the invasives is as much work as mowing. But trying to get through the list of different workhorse pollinators to find the short ones, it's mind-numbing.
All right. So, Craig, can you help Sarah out there?
Well, I don't know. I'm not a horticulturalist.
Yeah.
There are an enormous number of native grasses. The goal is to have what is commonly referred to as an alternative lawn, which means something that could be mowed, could be walked on. You can still play soccer on it. But instead of a non-native cool season grass, maybe it's a native warm season grass. A short one that just, for whatever reason, pops into my head is called buffalo grass. Mm. Might be one to look into.
Okay. We also have an email from Savio, who wanted to know if an HOA can override any local laws on pollinator gardens. So, Tony, can you tell us about the city rules versus where an HOA comes in?
Sure. The HOA rules are going to, if a pollinator garden is, if someone's interested in putting a pollinator garden and they are under HOA rules, they have to comply with the HOA rules. Mm-hmm. Now, the HOA rules cannot supersede city, like with vision triangles or other pieces like that, but some HOAs can prevent you from putting in a pollinator garden because that's what's in the bylaws.
Okay, so basically, if someone lives in an HOA community and reports weeds to you, and one of your code enforcement officers comes out and says, no, it's a pollinator garden and it looks great, good job, but then the HOA says, no, we don't like it, and they get rid of it, that you can't do anything about that.
Correct. The HOA may have height limitations on what can be placed in the yards or other areas, and that's something we can't force them to accept. We can allow it, but as you said, if the HOA bylaws prohibit essentially a pollinator garden, then the person could be forced to take it out. So I would encourage that they definitely look, if they're under HOA, look at their bylaws before they start any work.
So basically, before you put in all the work for it, Craig, you would say, check with your HOA, ask if you can do this, if there's a little like grassy area near your apartment.
Absolutely.
Okay. Go ahead.
I do have, one thing is if listeners are in an area that don't have sidewalks, I would suggest that they reach out to our department or through 311 and make that question about where can I put a pollinator garden in my yard? And either one of my code officers or one of my zoning staff will get back with them to help them understand where the setback is and vision triangles. So we're always trying to help out in that regards. And like I said, you know, if you don't have sidewalks, you don't have that natural barrier that helps keep things out of the setback area from the street.
Okay. So if you don't have a sidewalk, you can't technically plant all the way up to the road.
Correct.
Is that correct? Okay.
Correct.
Another thing that both of you wanted to talk about is off-season versus on-season. So we'll let you both weigh in on this. Craig, what is off-season for a pollinator garden mean?
Well, in general, you think of the seasonality of any plant, spring, summer, into the fall. It's a growing season. And then somewhere as temperatures and precipitation levels change, it either goes dormant or if it's an annual, it actually dies. I think this off-season appearance of perennials is maybe one of the critical aspects of conflict between neighbors because they are used to seeing plants either essentially go away. Mm. But conservation groups promote leaving stems over the winter with the seed heads attached. And that creates a tremendously different appearance to a garden. The seed heads provide needed food resources for birds, and the stems become the nest sites for about 30% of our native bees nest in hollow stems.
Hmm.
So if you cut all these stems down late in the fall, you are liable to be literally composting this year's crop of native bees.
Oh.
And you will not be providing habitat for next year's crop of native bees. So by leaving those plants standing, they're taller, they're brown, they're blown in the wind. It's a tremendously different off-season look, and I think that that's where people complain.
Mm. Is that true, Tony? Do you get complaints about brown, ugly weeds?
Most definitely. That is the appearance piece that a lot of folks get concerned with, and we wrote into the code as we were working through this process with a lot of the groups that as long as the plant is still standing, which is the beneficial way of keeping it over the winter, then we won't consider it solid waste. But if you cut plants down and pile it or not in a designated compost area of your yard, then you're liable to get a solid waste violation from a code officer. So we encourage people to keep it up. That's where also it really helps to have some sort of border that the grass doesn't kind of go right into the pollinator garden, because you end up with 4 to 6 inches of kind of pollinator and then grass grown taller than 12 inches. And that's where it starts to look rough for the neighbors. So we always suggest people try to have some sort of border. It doesn't have to be fancy or anything, but work with us so that my code officers have something to point to and go, there's a border there. There's some mindfulness to how they're doing it.
So hypothetically, if I have weeds along an alley near my house and I cut them all down so that they don't, you know, get overgrown, but I don't bag them all up for the yard waste to take away and I just leave them laying there, am I in a code violation?
If somebody complains, yes, you depends on how much there is.
Oops.
But as I mentioned earlier,
like 30 bags. I mean, they should be happy that their cars aren't hitting the weeds. I cut them down.
it is a challenge because most people would just let it lay, and we're just trying to make sure that we don't provide harborage for animals and nuisance animals. But at the same time, like I said, only if somebody complains about it will we even go out and look.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I'm trying to do my part. We have Catherine in Columbus. Catherine, what's your question?
Actually, I'm responding. Someone earlier asked, where do they find native species plants? Craig was correct. There's all kinds of information on the internet. I had this question myself last year after I had, well, I became interested in this 2 years ago when they had the Pollinator Palooza at Franklin Park Conservatory, and then decided to put in a garden this past year. And I searched on the internet and found that there were two main places then when I was looking that were offering native species. The one I worked with is Ohio Prairie, let me get this right, it's OPN.
Are you familiar with OPN, Greg?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ohio Prairie in the N stands for something. Got it.
Natives, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, one thing, the reason why I want to mention them is because the owner was very, very helpful in providing insights into what might be the best sort of things to try to plant. I had a large 200-year oak tree shading the yard, and you know, only some sun coming in. And they offer blends of seeds as well as individual seeds and seedlings. And so his help was generous and invaluable. Also, there's a woman that has nursery Natives in Harmony, and she has a website as well, and he highly recommended her for her expertise and range of species. But now that I look just today, I'm blown away. There are far more available than I had to look at just a year ago.
All right. Thank you for that, Catherine. So is Catherine right, Craig? Are there more places to find native plants even in the past year?
Well, I don't know about the timing aspects of that, but it's certainly a retail opportunity. And so nurseries are entering that marketplace. OPN is up in Hiram, Ohio, has a great reputation. My experience with them is mostly seed-based, whereas some of the other nurseries, native nurseries right here around Central Ohio, are more plant-based.
And we have time for one more call. Lucia in Worthington, what would you like to say?
Yes. As I say, I am delighted that we are repairing what we have destroyed. I wish that they prohibit pesticides and herbicides in the lawns. It destroyed the microorganisms. It destroyed the pollinators, the insects. It hurt our health. I can't even walk because I feel I was damaged by pesticides in my liver. So I don't know why they still allow this.
Okay.
And also, we had to educate. Mm-hmm. We had to educate that the weeds and the old nature is absolutely marvelous. There's nothing ugly about these seeds. And like the first gentleman was saying, we had to educate in the schools, etc., to appreciate and love the wonder of nature.
All right. Thank you so much for that call. Tony, are people allowed to use pesticides and there's no city regulation against it?
There's no city regulations against it. What's sold in the stores and what is on the labels is the law. I myself and my brother have working on some fields that we own, and we're just starting to get into it. And so we had to use some herbicides to get rid of invasive species in those fields. But the big thing is that you reading the label, understanding the label, and then and Craig can correct me if not, but the U.S. and Ohio EPA are the ones that regulate all those companies that come and put lawn fertilizer on and everything else.
Craig, as a rule, would you be anti-pesticide or fertilizer?
I don't think I could answer that. You know, as a rule, I think that there are a number of opportunities to reduce one's use of pesticides, particularly insecticides. You know, when you think of pesticides, there's lots of pests. Could be weeds, could be other animals, but insecticides are dramatically impacting insects. There are, I think, appropriate uses for those. There are some purists that you will find that are absolutely adamant about, you know, not using any kind of pesticide. I think most people are trying to be reasonable and use them very carefully, very sparingly, very intentionally, only when you need to.
Okay. And just real quick, Tony, if you do use something on your lawn, I've noticed there's sometimes those little signs people stick in it. There's no code that says you have to do that. That's just being a kind neighbor to say that you did that.
Correct. And that may most likely is required by the product's labeling that the either Ohio EPA or US EPA requires of them.
You buy the product, it comes with a little sign, they say stick it in your yard. Got it. Well, I want to say thank you to you both for joining us today. We've been talking with Craig Toothman, founder and president of Pollinator Pathway of Franklin County. Craig, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And Tony Celebrezzi III, Columbus's deputy director in the Department of Building and Zoning Services. Tony, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And this has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.